This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 290 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my weekly Talk Franklin conversation with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and marketing communications specialist, Anne Marie Tracy. We held our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. In the conversation this session, we talk about reopening. Jamie just got granted temporary license authority by the town council. Recreation planning is underway, targeting for July. Phase 2 additional pieces are waiting on the Governor Baker decision this weekend. We talk about the budget, of course. The fourth and final of the budget hearings was held by the time you listen to this. The school committee holds an important June 9th meeting. And then the town council budget discussions get underway June 17 and 18. We then move on to the spotlight, this time on the town clerk. And we close with some cultural comments about a new album by Nicole Atkins, a great blues singer. Her album link via the Bandcamp is included in the show notes. The recording runs around 43 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie.
All right, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, and 102.9 on the Franklin dial in the Franklin Arena. Here again for our weekly Talk Franklin session with Town Administrator Jamie Helen and Marketing Communications Specialist Anne-Marie Tracy. Good afternoon, folks, and welcome.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. Good to be here.
It is indeed. It's a nice day outside.
Beautiful.
It is. It feels like summer.
We'll take it.
I need to set up like a remote office outside, like my third office, you know, like outside at a park bench.
Are there opening protocols for an office outside?
Right.
That's kind of a good segue into what we wanted to talk about anyway, right?
It kind of is. It's a perfect segue, actually.
So for those who hadn't heard on the town council meeting, one of the key pieces that has certainly been some buzz around the news, et cetera, restaurants and outdoor seating, and the town council went so far to give you some temporary license authority last night.
Yeah, that was great. It was kind of a rare moment where it legally fits on the agenda, and I think it speaks to the fluidity of everything COVID. The ABCC had, who's the State Alcoholic Beverages Control Commission, which governs all the liquor licenses in Massachusetts, they put out some guidance earlier this week that the local licensing authority, which for the council, or for Franklin, is the town council, just for alcohol. The town administrator's office, we do all the other licenses for common victualers and entertainment and so forth. But for the alcohol, they were proposing that restaurants should have to get a plan approved under the governor's order for outside dining, and that the local licensing authority would have to approve the extension of that permit license into the parking lots. And my initial reaction was, good grief, how can you do that in a timeline like this? If the governor announces the restaurants can open on Monday the 8th or even Friday the 12th, for example, a lot of boards of selectmen in other towns or town councils, in our case, don't necessarily have meetings scheduled to be able to do approval of those plans.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is you know, all of the inspections and tax compliance and all of the incidentals are basically done by the staff in almost every community. And so we prepare all of that stuff for the council when they have a regular liquor license application. But I found that to be a big problem, and I made a lot of phone calls to Senator Spilka and Representative Roy and Ralph Sacramone at the ABCC, and worked with our town attorney, Mark Sorrell, and so last night the council was late. Gave me the authority to approve those, the temporary expansion licenses for alcohol, food, and entertainment. During this difficult time, those licenses will only be in effect till November 1st. But the good news is as always, the staff was a little ahead of this. And Chrissy Welton in our office is already packaged a memo to every licensee in town, as well as an online viewpoint application for all of the restaurants and luncheons and food folks in town that consume food on site, whether you have alcohol or not, are able to submit a plan to us, hopefully beginning this weekend, on whether or not they want to exercise an extension of any of their licenses, what their outdoor dining plans might be, what their contingent plan is for parking. We're trying to make this process as smooth and as with as little red tape as possible for obvious reasons. We know for a fact that I know, because I already have some plans in my inbox from restaurants in town asking what the protocols would be. And so that notification will hopefully go out tomorrow or over the weekend, and businesses will be able to start understanding what the regulations are and what the standards are and what the application process is going to be. And the important thing here is that if somebody came to me, you know, on a Tuesday and said, here's my plan, I can have the staff review that and be done with it that day. Right. I don't have to wait a week or 2 weeks
to get it queued for the council. Yeah.
Right. Or a board of selectmen would be in the same boat, right?
Sure.
If you're in Wrentham or Norfolk and you have to wait 2 weeks, or the worst case I thought was now you have to get your board together to actually have a public meeting within 48 hours, even if it's on Zoom. And I'm sitting there thinking that's not good for business. That's not right. And so, yeah. You know, I kind of pushed and pushed and pushed, and I guess I pushed enough where I eventually got my way. And it's not about me. This is about everybody else in the community. In trying to be as proactive, as diligent as possible to allow as many restaurants and luncheons to open up. It doesn't require that they do. It's really up to them. And there's a few of the criteria in the state that they're asking for. That if you, for example, if you do not own your own parking lot, you have to have a letter of acknowledgement from the landowner that you can do this. If you are planning on putting up a tent structure, you absolutely have got to maintain a permit from the building commissioner and a flame retardant certificate. These are just general public safety things that we do all the time. We cannot waive those things. If people could imagine, if a tent was set up in like the Franklin Village Mall parking lot for a restaurant and a big windstorm came, you know, that tent can go flying. It could really hurt a lot of people.
Sure.
Still going to require inspections of those tents. But our building commissioner is always, Gus Brown, is ready to go. And so the approvals will come from myself, the building commissioner, police chief, and the board of health agent, Kathy Liberty. And we've really worked over the last week. We were already working on this permitting process before the state put out their guidance. And so we feel like we're ready to hit the ground running next week. And at least the handful of folks who have already emailed me asking questions over the last week, you know, hopefully we can get them up and running when the governor opens phase two. We will find out on Saturday, June 6th, when that date is. I feel like this is really good news for the business owners of Franklin and the customers, for people like me, and I'm sure Anne-Marie too, and maybe you too, Steve.
Yep.
Because they said at the downtown partnership meeting, part of it's a little selfish too, because it's like, I'm like everybody else. I want to go out and have a meal. You know, and be able to go back and feel like we're, you know, like getting a haircut this week. You feel like you're getting back into a new rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's
sure.
A good thing to see this week.
No, I was pleased on two fronts. Certainly no surprise that you and your staff were prepared for such. I was pleased that the council relatively easily agreed to the natural extension and allowed you to do that. And obviously it's not like you're granting a net new license. They still have to do that. But for an extension for an existing license for these purposes under the time and causes specific, that makes a whole lot of sense from a timing perspective. And ultimately it's going to help our revenue as well as well as the people and never mind the businesses. So
morale.
It made a whole lot of sense.
You know, I think Absolutely. Representative Roy said a couple things today that really hit me, that a lot of people you don't hear this crisis has obviously, you know, put a dent in, you know, our socialization with one another and friendships and And I think getting back to that new normal and starting this is something that's going to be really, really important for the community fabric, as much as it will for revenue, and as much as it will for business development and getting the economy back going again.
Yep. Yeah, because as much as we've been personally trying to support the local businesses, under the circumstances, I don't think I'll be sitting in a restaurant anytime soon. But if there's a takeout option or an outdoor option, absolutely. Yeah, so by all means.
I think that the legislation that's poised to go through will help as well, and that's what we were really looking towards regarding the take-home cocktails. Regarding all these little things they're trying to do up on the hill to generate that money. I frequently joke that there's an unbelievable Mexican restaurant around the corner from where I live, some really authentic stuff. And my wife and I, do what you're doing, talking about, Steve, let's go put some cash in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't deny it. I mean, my wife and I talk about it all the time. We wish we could get our cucumber jalapeno spiced margaritas to go, because then you get home and you're like, well, I want to eat the food. I want to just go, and it over the last couple months, it's one minor critique I've had is that I think that they should have done that a couple months ago. And a lot of other states did it. California, I think, was right out of the gate doing it. And I just thought it really would have given businesses and restaurants a huge revenue source to be able to do things like that. So, better late than never.
Yep. At least it's here. And Chloe will be waiting on the announcement supposedly as early as Saturday, since the governor indicated that the data from Monday through Friday would determine the date of the phase two opening. But in the meantime, recreation planning is certainly underway as well.
I think Jetty was on the Board of Health call last night, and
yes.
Ryan, which is obviously no surprise to anybody at all. Ryan and I really believe that recreation programming, camps, summer camps are going to be really hard, for a lot of reasons, the planning required, the, logistical difficulties, but programming is different. And I think I did challenge Ryan a month or two ago or four or five weeks ago. We can't wait for the governor on everything. We have to think about what programming looks like for Franklin, for our customers, for mm-hmm. our citizens.
Right.
How are we going to do this safe, regardless of what the governor said? And which should be absolutely no shock to anybody. Ryan, as always, just went out and started developing that. And, up until earlier this week, we really still didn't know where the lay of the land was, and getting a little frustrated with the timing. Ryan doesn't just wave a magic wand and this stuff happens. It takes a lot of work on him and his staff. But I think thinking about it that way, and what I've tried to encourage every department head to do, is let's not really just look at all the regs and interpretations, but let's just use the minimum workplace standards and use the information, unlearn what we have learned, and take that and try to start thinking about everything that we're doing and how we're going to get back to the new normal safely, and what can we do to get ready for that. And it should, of course, be no shock that Ryan has devised a tremendous amount of great ideas for summer programs. They're obviously going to look different. Some of the program offerings are likely to be different. In some ways, I'm kind of excited to see what he's going to cook up. Amory's definitely smiling, I just think that I'm just happy that we're going to be able to offer something. And he's looking at July 13th as a target date to do that. I will not make any bones about it. We're still holding out a random hope that concerts on the common can happen in some sort of form. Some people probably will not be happy the fact that I just said that, but many other people might be. There's a lot of other ways to do this. I think by the time we get to mid-July, it's still 5 weeks away, and I think of where we were 5 weeks ago, the situation may be very different. And so, I'm just really just, we don't have a lot of details yet, Ryan obviously is going to work with all the youth sports programs in town to figure out what their plans are. But I think the idea that we can do things starting in mid-July and for the rest of the summer is just something that we should really be, we're really thankful for.
I think it's going to be fantastic. I mean, the kids are done in school in 2 weeks. You know, Franklin Public Schools are out 2 weeks from today. And, you know, as a mother, I think the kids are really going to be looking forward to having structured things to do. So having programming available in town, I have no doubt Ryan is going to come up with some amazing ideas and be very creative within the parameters that are being required, we have to follow. But I think it's so important for families, for our community, to have things like that to look forward to. Whether they start July 13th or whenever, it's just good for everybody's morale.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to put it.
Yep, for sure. All right, moving along, budget. You've got the last of the four sessions tonight, so by the time this is out, it'll be behind us. But for those from the FinCon perspective, at least, that'll be setting up for the town council to make their decisions later this month.
So, as you stated, Steve, it's certainly true. The finance committee will wrap up this evening. At least the deliberations over the budget, they have a few recommendations in front of them, both one for the FY21 budget to send to the council, but also we put on the agenda a couple of capital requests. We put on a borrowing authorization consideration. And so they have a few things to do tonight. We hope they wrap up this evening. I did build in an additional week in between finance committee and the council hearings in the event that the finance committee wanted to deliberate, one or two more times next week. I do anticipate them wrapping up the business tonight. There's been some great questions from the finance committee. And, I think the germane message is, people in town, as I said at the downtown partnership meeting today, and everybody's busy and trying to figure out what they're going to do moving forward. But we have a colossal structural budget deficit going into FY21. I've already reduced revenues by at least a couple million for local revenues. There's no question that state aid will be cut in some sort of way. I was pleased to hear last night that Representative Roy and Senator Spilka essentially said the entire House of Representatives, every member, their number one priority is local aid. And the reason why that's important is because we get about 30 plus or minus million in local aid every year. And if you get a 10% cut, it's $3 million.
Yeah.
A 20% cut in Franklin is like $6.5 million.
Significant.
And I mean, I said it last night on the meeting, $6.5 million of town services could be reduced by the time we're having this interview in September or October. And people need to understand those are going to be noticeable, devastating cuts to our school district. Those are going to be, if it's that high, it's certainly going to be major reductions at the library, including likely the DPW. A $6.5 million cut just cannot be absorbed without substantial reductions in expenses, services, and personnel. It's just the way it is. And, essentially, your only options at that point as a community are to go to the citizens and ask for more money. Or they can get behind certain lobbyist organizations or municipal organizations and try to lobby the legislature to do more. But people really need to understand, no matter what the FinCom does tonight or what the council does in a couple of weeks, the town is headed for some very turbulent waters. And, obviously our hope and the way that I framed all this, Steve, is that by lowering the local receipts and levy locally now and essentially hitting those at a level that are quite substantial. And in the case of new growth, the lowest number we've ever budgeted for in over a decade. I'm setting the tone up that if we can get the economy at least moving and people back out and spending money and reopen Marshalls, TJ Maxx, and all the local businesses in town and restaurants and generating meals tax revenue. Also parallel with this is daycare coming back at some point, which will allow more employees to go back to work in a real building or be able to have some more space if they're still working from home to be able to work. And hopefully these things can confluence together over the summer. And then the hope is that by the time we see what kind of reductions coming from the state, maybe our revenues locally are a little bit higher than what I anticipated a month ago when we started this process. And maybe some of this will equal out at some point, or at least prevent some of the damage being done by whatever gets cut from the state. So, that's the kind of view from 10,000 feet of how we're looking over the next 6 months. So, certainly a lot of debate to be going on, and I think that people in town are going to start to see and they're going to start to feel what some of the cost reductions are in the next few months.
Yeah, because coming out of FinCom tonight, I know the school committee has a budget subcommittee meeting tomorrow in prep for their meeting Tuesday the 9th, because I know it was discussed on when they were at the FinCom meeting a week ago. They have to make their notifications per contract, et cetera, by June 15th. So they can't wait till the town council final decision. Not that I would think that the council would have changed anything. There's not a whole lot to change, respectfully. So they're going to have to go with what they've got. And those folks will start hearing out more details in advance of the school committee meeting on Tuesday. And then, fasten your seatbelt for the white water rafter. We're into Cat 5 or whatever the highest cat number is as we go.
Yeah, I used to be a whitewater kayaking instructor.
So did I hit that one? Whoa.
You just totally walked right into a wheelhouse. So, I wouldn't say this is class 5 rapids. This is not the West Branch of the Penobscot up in Maine yet. You know, we're really in class 3 right now, which is more medium level. White water.
I was thinking more of a 10-point scale on, but I had no idea. No,
I could geek out on this for a while, but I won't. I'll spare the listeners. But
that's okay.
Class one and class two, or class one rapids, are really lily dipping. You're just putting the paddle into the top of the water. You know, class three is where you're starting to get into, some turbulent stuff where you really need to pay attention. Class four is some hard water. Class five is elite stuff. It's fairly challenging, extremely difficult. You would never do it in a kayak. You're in a raft. We're in class three right now. We're in a little rocky road. We could pick up and hit class four soon. And I think in the next couple of weeks, to the point you just made about school committee deliberations, they're obviously going to have some hard choices, and they may be hitting class four rapid soon. Make no mistake, we are unquestionably, there's no way around it almost. We are going to hit class 5 rapids come fall. No question about it. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Rapid fire side thought that while we have and haven't touted a whole lot, kind of the ask administrator questions, we can also incorporate a new feature, bury kind of like a trivia piece along the way, and then, down the road have questions and like, okay, what's a Cat 3 rapid, and see who pays attention.
We may even get another caller. That guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I just think the most important thing is that, and I say it in my budget message right at the top, and we know that citizens are going to have to really, be engaged as much as possible. And it's funny, I was on a call today with other town managers. We started a lunch with managers thing, just us, it's really just talking to each other about ideas. And one of the things that came up was about whether to have you know, the struggle for a lot of town meetings or selection meetings in buildings, right? And so one of the things that came up was one of the things about Zoom and about some of the Hangouts that's fascinating is, and we are seeing this in Franklin too, is that you're seeing a lot more people tune into a council meeting on Zoom who normally would not have shown up in the audience at the building anyway. Right. And sure, and there's an equalization out here because the meetings are being broadcast through Zoom on the Franklin TV and the meetings in the building are being broadcast on the Franklin TV. And so to me, that's kind of a wash. If you watch Franklin TV to watch the council meetings, you were watching them before COVID and you're watching them now anyway.
Correct.
But Zoom is bringing in some additional people. And one of the things that I think is beneficial about that, from my perspective, is that, you know, I'm hoping that through these meetings, people are tuning in and they're learning more about what's coming. And I'm hopeful that, you know, that participation will continue, you know, in the months ahead.
Yeah, it's an easy number, obviously, via the Zoom or even the Google Meet that I know school committee and schools use more frequently for some of their meetings versus whatever the stats are. And that's one thing that the stats may be available as to what they're watching is on, you know, the cable TV side. I've never seen the numbers there, so I don't know what to compare it to. But to the extent that, yeah, we had 90 plus last night, we've had prior meetings where I think it was the school committee meeting tapped out at 100 and people were concerned because they wanted to participate, et cetera. So we had to reinforce the live streaming, which is separate. And then the cable certainly is another option. So people are getting engaged, which is good because as we have had our conversation going through this budget cycle, and as I've said, and you certainly agree, of any time, now is the time to be engaged because of these decisions that need to be made.
And I think looking down the line, I mean, just for another quick minute, it's one of those things that I think people, you know, really, really need to, be a part of. There's going to be some very, very difficult decisions being made. And, you know, the community needs to become accustomed to what are they willing to have for their governmental services. And their governmental services right now, if you add up the vast majority of the town budget, you're looking at the school department is roughly, you know, 57 to 60% of the department, 80% of their cost of that money are going to teachers and personnel. Yep. You add in on the municipal side, you look at my budget, and you're looking at about another $20 million. In fire, police, DPW, and our custodial unit, and our building maintenance. So you're talking about, you know, 80 to 85% of the budget is really teachers, cops, firefighters, paramedics, water sewer operators, custodians who are unquestionably on the front lines, just like everybody else.
Sure.
They're disinfecting the buildings. They're putting themselves out there. They're in masks. They're in gloves. They're taking all the precautions. They're disinfecting our vehicles, our fleet. And the bravery of those folks is not to be underestimated. But when you look at it, these cuts are going to affect not just layoffs, you know, but what you're really talking about is these cuts are going to affect, you know, service levels that people in Franklin, I think, are fairly happy with. And so, you know, the question for the citizens at some point is, do you want to take that step forward and build the bridge over the cliff, or do you want to fall down the cliff, hit the bottom, and then climb back up?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the question for the community. Over the next several months, for sure, if we kind of see parallel, where is this public health crisis going to be, and what's the economy going to look like? And I think that's the next 4 months in front of us. And it's going to be a slow slog, but that's going to be the question: is do you want to build the bridge to the other side for when hopefully we're past all this, or do you want to fall over the cliff and then climb back up after you hit bottom? So we'll see how that transpires.
Yeah, because I think the other two buzzwords that come to mind, with all due respect, you've been very transparent in terms of the reporting, the information that's shared, and I certainly share it as well. But then the access, you know, your accessibility, the individual department's accessibility, so that people can reach out, ask a question, yep. and get an answer in a timely manner. Those are keys, clearly, in building the relationship. And the chief talked about that last night in the community services, et cetera. You know, Ben Franklin certainly gets some kudos for the therapy dog he is, but every other person in uniform does something similar as well. So,
I mean, you look at during this COVID pandemic, you know, the police behind the scenes are in the process of busting a major fentanyl dealer.
Right.
Yep. I'm sitting here behind, you know, the screen in my off time, you know, renegotiating an intermunicipal agreement to add two more towns to our regional dispatch. That's not, you know, that's not simple cupcake stuff. That's complicated legal stuff that has a huge impact on a lot of towns. And to get six town attorneys to agree on language is not simple.
No, no.
We've got businesses going in right now that want planning board applications. We've got, Netta is proposing the retail store down on Grove Street. We have a new brewery that just opened. We have Glen Farmer Distillery, which is technically open, but they never really got to have their opening.
Yeah,
There's a lot of other things going on in this community, and that's on our plate. We love the work we do. I love it. Steve, I have a lot of fun. But I think the fentanyl example is, you know, despite what's going on in people's impressions, behind the scenes, day in, day out, our staff are nonstop working on other stuff to maintain public safety, to maintain our water lines, to maintain our business development and keeping our competitive edge. The reason why we have Anne-Marie here was to work mm-hmm. on a lot of this as we hopefully getting into the economic analysis and footprint. And, you know, and now, you know, of course, because Anne-Marie and I both have way too many ideas, we have a lot.
You just
know,
need
a lot
that clone to help you work on those while you're doing something
yeah,
else.
Yeah,
right?
But this is setting the town up for success, you know,
of course.
And our paramedics, I mean, you know, you look at the assisted living complexes throughout Massachusetts. I mean, we've had very, very few cases at ours. And that's one of the reasons is because our paramedics are, when there's a case, they're just all over working with those businesses to make sure that they don't have another transmission of that case. And,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of that credit does go to the paramedics in town. And so
Right. Everybody's
doing all this stuff that I think a lot of stakeholders in town recognize. But as the rock band Cinderella used to say, you don't know what you get until it's gone.
Okay.
We're talking about how so much of it is customer service, you know, and you don't always think of of all the departments as a customer service, but ultimately we are serving the community in so many different ways, and
Absolutely. Not
just, you know, due to this COVID-19, there, like Jamie said, there's so many things going on in the background all the time,
sure.
and trying to keep all of those things going during this and making sure that we're still business as usual as best as possible has been an across the board goal for every department. Every person that we've talked to is just trying to provide the best we possibly can.
Yep. And that's a good segue into certainly in terms of telling the story of all the details of all the behind the scenes work. Now you've got that spotlight series to clearly some have been more in the spotlight, police, fire, board of health, but generally work in the background. But now you're able to via the museum and the town clerk, and you've got a list of the other departments to go through to share their story because people need to know those details.
Absolutely. It's, everybody's got their story. Some of the departments are more in the public eye than others, like you mentioned. Some happen a lot more in the background, and the public doesn't necessarily know all the things that are going on. The spotlight that I just came out with was for the town clerk. The town clerk is obviously a very, out in the public department, not right now with some of the closures, but they're... The expectation for the town clerk is that you can go there and get what you need.
Mm-hmm.
You can get the documents you need. You can get the you know, have recordings done. The umbrella of that encompasses all the things they do is very large.
Yeah.
And they both, Teresa and Nancy, when I spoke to them, expressed how hard it was for them to, and how much they miss the pup yes. being in the public. There, you don't go into that role or into that profession if you don't like working with people. And definitely both expressed how much they miss being in the office and having people come in and talk and you know, just getting to know the community. But that being said, they have done everything that they have been able to do within the constraints of the virus. When I was speaking to them, Nancy, you know, Nancy, there's still a lot going on. You know, babies are still born. There's still marriages going on.
Death certificates, voter registrations.
And information that has to go to, you know, funeral directors. And none, that stuff cannot wait. So all this is happening different ways. You know, people have to call in to get service. And, well, now the drive-up window is open. But their story is, it's just really interesting. I mean, when I was in last week, Nancy was headed off to marry a couple on the town common. You know, people are still getting married. They're still, and they need these things. And one of the things that I found really interesting in talking to her that I hadn't thought about is, you know, these couples, they had these wedding plans, whether they were big, they were small, destination, whatever they had planned for their event, they're canceled. But legally, getting married is still very important for many of them. Ooh, they have to, they need it for tax purposes.
Healthcare.
Job.
Healthcare.
And they need to get on their spouse's healthcare if they're not married, that it's required. Mm-hmm. So they're really providing important, essential services for our community members. And it's all still happening, just a little differently, but they're certainly there to serve. And then speaking to Teresa, we spoke a lot about the upcoming election, which, you know, there's so many unknowns right now with the election, whether it's going to be, you know, what's going to happen with absentee ballots, what's going to happen with mail-in voting, what it's going to look like. And it's a lot more difficult to prepare in this time. There's a lot of preparation normally, but it's even more difficult with so many unknowns and not knowing what's going to happen with election workers. Many of them fall in the high-risk category. So are they going to be comfortable coming out and performing those jobs? So they're just trying to do the very best they can to get ready. And, you know, their story is really interesting. So I hope that anybody who finds the spotlight on social media or on our website will take a few moments to read it and just learn a little bit more about everything that's going on in the town clerk's department.
I agree, because when I talked with them early in the COVID corona piece, the two items that they were not doing at the time, one was the notary public piece, which I know legislation was passed so that they resolved. And then now that they do at least have some access, that was the second piece where the confirmation of the voter registrations that came in through RMV, et cetera, were not getting mailed out to the people. But those are the only two things. And they were doing, to your point, everything else that was required by the office. They just were doing it from their homes. So they were fully functional.
They were up and running. And a lot of the work that they do, well, a decent amount of the election work has to be done in the office. Correct. Which, again, if you would look through, if people read the spotlight, there's a dedicated computer there that is not, there's no access to it remotely. So they, even though the building has been closed to the public, they've been there because it had to be. It's very interesting because I learn every time I do one of these, I learn something. And I certainly learned a lot more about some of the background of what happens in the town clerk's department.
Yes, indeed. Good stuff.
Yeah, it really is good stuff. I mean, I think that, you know, they really do a great job, and you know, earlier on in this, it was tough, I think, for anyone to want to go into the building and do that work. You know, any of us were nervous.
It was risky. You didn't know.
And I'm talking about a time, you know, where the numbers were, you know, hundreds of deaths a day, thousands of cases and whatnot. And so, you know, like we can always kind of, Nancy and Teresa and Susan, step up to the plate. So I just thought it was a great story to tell, because I think it shows not only the staff spirit, you know, and you know, for example, someone like Nancy that's going out and marrying people on the common and the parking lot, on the front stoop of the town hall, municipal building. And, you know, I hope the citizens that listen to this show realize, you know, I hope they realize how good they've got it with a lot of great staff here. I mean, you know, it's easy to say, oh no, I can't do that. It's a lot harder to say, I'm going to find a way to do it. And, oh, not only that, I'm going to find a way to do it. And I'm also going to give you some options. And we're going to make it work. And we're going to try to make the best out of this wedding. You know, in that example, and Anne-Marie brings up a good point, you know, there's benefits issues related to all this stuff.
Sure.
People can't wait 3 weeks to, you know, do something. You know, they need it now for whatever reason. We lost a job, and we're unemployed. And
especially on the healthcare side, because if you don't have certain enrollment periods, you get paid penalties after that. And it's just, oh, you can't afford that period.
But to have them make the most of it and try to, you know, make it, you know, a memorable moment, despite all this, you know, it speaks volumes to them. So, you know, kudos to Teresa and Nancy and Susan for getting about them.
I think that brings us a close for this week, relatively short, but there's more coming. So anything else, Jamie or Anne-Marie, at this point?
Quick plug. Can't give up the moment, Steve. I gotta decompress somehow.
Right? Of course, of course.
I mean, you know, working long hours, love working them. A great album. I've gotten away from the TV, but a great album that was released this week was by a blues and R&B singer named Nicole Atkins. And she put out an album called Italian Ice. I've been lucky enough to see her a couple of times. She has an unbelievable voice. If folks don't like that record, they can go back to the one before, Goodnight Rhonda Lee, which is really what sucked me into her fandom. Her name is Nicole Atkins. People should go check it out on Spotify, services, whatever they get stuff. Obviously, can't buy CDs these days, but, you know, Goodnight Rhonda Lee, Italian Ice, Nicole Atkins, unbelievable vocalist. I can see Anne-Marie's checking her out right now. She's a great blues singer. People like that. I know Franklin's a pretty big blues town. A lot of fans out there. She's quite good. So, you know, maybe if people are sick and tired of the news or sick and tired of whatever's going on, they can maybe find a little hour respite in some Nicole Atkins. So I'll leave on a fun note.
Oh, good. And I made Jim Derrick does a Talk in the Blues radio show.
I've done it with him.
You know, that's right. You did. You were one
of
his guests.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I you know, I feel good because I put a few new people on Jim. He came into me. He goes, I never heard of a few of these people. He goes, where did you find it? You know, it's funny. And and so, yeah, Jim's it's actually how Jim and I kind of, you know, hit it off the first couple times we met when we did his radio show.
Cool.
Realized that we were big rock and roll fans. And, you know, so we share stories all the time still. You know,
excellent. Well, music's a good place to connect folks with too, because that's one of the reasons why the cultural district that I've been active on bringing here, and now it's finally here, although albeit it's kind of not operational yet because of the COVID stuff. But when it comes back, we'll be ready for it. Absolutely. We need that.
Yeah, definitely. Nicole Atkins, go check them out, Steve.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you for your time. Our pleasure, have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week to talk more Franklin.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks, Anne-Marie.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.